So I want to pick up in April the 1st, 1916. What stripping is required of the soul so that her heartbeat may be one with Jesus? Now, this is a very important message, because that stripping is not taking your car and your house off you, which you need. It's stripping us of unhelpful desires and motivations and uses of our will. And so it's an interior stripping that we're actually talking about. Okay. And it's a bit like when you're rearing children, that if you find a child puts something into their mouth which you know is dangerous, you will take it off them. Not because you don't love them, but because you do love them. And you want them to be healthy and well. The spiritual stripping is the same thing, that the Lord takes off us something that he knows is not good for you. And he wants you to be spiritually healthy and strong. So this morning, my sweet Jesus made himself seen within my heart. Now that's Luke 17:21. The kingdom of God is within you. And his heartbeat was beating in mine. Now that's called union with God. Okay. And I want to give you Galatians 2:20 for it. I no longer live, Christ lives in me. So Jesus said, my daughter, for one who really loves me. Now, if I was reading this for myself, I ring the really. I know you all love him. The really means, have you brought the loving A up to the divine level and B up to the 100%. For one who really loves me and does my will in everything. Now, everything is thoughts, words, deeds, actions, motivations, desires, the lot. Does my will in everything. Her heartbeat and mine become one. Because that means that everything inside of us is corresponding to what's in the Lord. So I call them my heartbeats. So this is the Lord saying that Francis's heartbeats are his. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. That's a much greater thing than me saying the Lord's heartbeats are mine. So I call them my heartbeats, he said, and as such, I want them around and even inside the heartbeat of my heart. Now, this is the depth of union that he's looking for. Not just that you are superficially doing the will of God. People living a decent Christian life are all trying to do that. This is the highest level of holiness that the Lord is asking of us. So that we would be inside of his heartbeats, and therefore what he wants will be expressed in us and through us. And you would be all intent on consoling me and sweetening all my sorrowful heartbeats. So that means you would be into intercession for souls and making reparation. Her heartbeat in mine would form a sweet harmony because of the union, which will repeat my whole life. You know that Louisa keeps on saying, Lord, whatever you do, I want to repeat. Whatever you say, I want to repeat. This would repeat my whole life and will force and will speak to me of souls, forcing me to save them. Now, when you look at the word forcing, I would ring that because it needs explanation. You can't force God to do anything. Is that okay? The language used there is simply that we would repeat Jesus' own prayers and repeat his own actions and use his precious blood to save souls. And therefore, this is the pressure he's talking about that you would put on him. But my daughter, what stripping is required to be the echo of my heartbeat? In other words, to get to this place, an awful lot of stripping has got to actually happen. That's why on this journey into divine will that we're all on, there is continuous cleansing going on. And the Lord continuously strips us down until we get to the size and shape that we're supposed to be. What stripping is required to be the echo of my heartbeat? It must be a life more of heaven than of earth. Now, a life more of heaven than of earth will be diametrically opposed to everybody around you. Because even good Christians, fervent Christians, are more of earth than heaven. Okay? And so to be more of heaven than earth is a completely opposite thing. And therefore, you will find when you talk to others in the parish, or let's just give that as an example, that they'd have nothing to say to you. Like, how do you talk to somebody who's flying overhead in a 747? You're on the ground. You can't. And they're going to perceive this distance between you and them. Now, the Lord can get over that distance. I'm simply trying to say the difference between someone being more earthly than heavenly and someone more heavenly than earthly. Okay, it's a huge difference. Because we have to try and grasp the enormity of the grace that's being given, offered to us. It must be a life more of heaven than of earth, more divine than human, because the Lord teaches us to have all our prayer on the divine level, isn't that right? All our motivations and desires and everything on the divine level. Even one shadow, one little thing, is enough to prevent the soul from feeling the strength, the harmony. I think that should be in the singular for English, and the sanctity of my heartbeat. Now notice, one little shadow means a small little bit of Francis's will getting in on it. Okay. Even a small bit will put a shadow on the thing. That's like saying, if the sun is shining brilliantly through this window, okay, and I put a small towel in front of the window, not covering the whole thing, but it'll create an enormous shadow. And it will spoil the fullness of the light and the warmth of the sun coming through. That's what he's saying, that our, what we call small faults, are only small if you're, once we get to Drumantine, you're going to hear me talking about the three levels. That is down here, middle and upper. Down here is worldly people, absolutely not living for God at all. Middle group are the good Christians, the good people who are living for God insofar as they know it. And the upper level is the divine will. And it's extremely important for us to be lifted up to the third level and stay there. We can get tired being lifted up. You know, and we can decide, Ashram, I'm having a day off. It's Christmas, do you mind? You know, we can do that without even making a decision about it. We can just sort of, it's kind of automatic for us, you know what I mean? Or in some kind of a difficulty that comes to you, you decide, no, Francis is going to tell her mind this time. That means you slithered right down. And the problem is, to fall from a height can create great injury. Ask any of the climbers and ask any of the skiers and they'll all tell you. Okay, so the life that we're called to live is more divine than human. Even one shadow, one little thing is enough to prevent the soul from feeling the strength and the harmony and the sanctity of my heartbeat. And so she does not echo my heartbeat. You see with that shadow? We're no longer in harmony. So she does not harmonize together with me, and I am forced to remain alone in my sorrow and or in my joys. And these sorrows I receive from souls who know the S is not required, who know how much they have promised me, but on the occasions of sin understood. We say the occasion of sin. Louisa simply uses the expression the occasions, and she doesn't add of sin, which can be a bit difficult. And under the time of the occasions of sin, I am left disappointed in their promises. Now, that last sentence is about consecrated souls. Throughout these writings, Jesus says he's more hurt by consecrated souls not giving themselves fully to him than someone who doesn't know at all. And that's completely logical. Who is it that hurts you the most? Isn't it someone in your own family? Someone who is close to you, that you've got deep ties with? Whereas somebody living a couple of streets away, they could say and do what they liked and wouldn't have any effect on you, more or less. Is that okay? That's what he's talking about, that the sins and the refusals of consecrated people hurt him the most. So April the 15th, 1916. Everything in Jesus the Word speaks lovingly to souls, and the soul who lives in his will is all voice together with him. Now, underline is all voice, because he says that in the divine will, he makes us a speaking universe. The galaxies out in the heavens cannot speak. They cannot express themselves. And through the rounds that he teaches us to do, we actually speak for them. And we glorify God in the name of all creation. So Louisa said, I live dying because of the continuous privations of my sweet Jesus. This morning I found all of myself in Jesus. Now, John 14, 21. You in me and I in you. As if I were swimming in the immensity of my highest good. Now, that immensity is the divine will. So put DW there. Then I looked inside of myself and I saw Jesus in me. And I could hear. Now, no. First of all, she says, I'm in the immensity of his presence. And then she looks inside of herself and she sees that he's in her presence. Because this is union, you see, you and me and I and you. Then I looked inside of myself and I saw Jesus in me. And I could hear the whole being of Jesus speak. Talk about a speaking universe. Watch this. His feet, his hands, his heart, his mouth. In sum, everything was voice. Now, you come to understand that when you do the intercessions that Louisa does during the hours of the Passion, in which she does adorations to all the different parts of the body of Jesus. Because in doing that, you're interceding for all the different places that souls are in the mystical body. That's actually what you're doing. So everything was voice. Not only this, but the wonder was that these voices became immense. Now, do you remember we're told that at the divine level, everything becomes immense and eternal? Okay. And they multiplied for each soul. The feet of Jesus spoke to the feet, to each step of humanity. That means to make reparation for all the wrong steps that have been taken and to guide the steps of the human race towards God. His hands spoke to their works. So again, redeeming the works of humanity. His eyes to their gazes and his thoughts to each one of their thoughts. Now I have Acts 17:28 there. What harmony between Jesus and creatures? Now notice the translators love putting this into the plural. Okay. What an enchanting sight. What love. But alas, all these harmonies were broken by the ingratitude and by sins. Love was repaid by offences. Now, John of the Cross tells us that love can be repaid by love alone. And any parent can tell you that as well. The only response they look for in a child is love. Isn't that correct? Mm-hmm. So, if the only response that Jesus, who is divine love and on the earth incarnate love, gets only offences as a response, then that's a total contradiction. And Jesus, all afflicted, said to me, my daughter, I am the verbum, the word. That's John 1, 1 to 14. And my love towards the soul is so great that I multiply into as many voices for as many acts, thoughts, affections and desires of each one. He's covered every thought, word, action, movement, step at every single soul who has, is, or will ever live. It's mind-blowing. In order to receive from them the return of those acts done for love of me. Now notice, love always needs a return. If you love someone and there is no return of love, that is one of the greatest frustrations that a person can experience. Love is a circle. It must be given and it must be received. And after being received, it's then given again. So if love comes from you to me, it is given by you, received by me, and then I must give it back. So then it's received by you and given by me. Then it is complete. And that's how it is with the Lord as well. The Lord's love comes to us. We must receive it. We must respond. So we give him love. And it's the only thing that we can give him. Just like it's the only thing that a child can give. I give love, he said, and I want love. So it's 1 John 4:7, God is love. But I receive offences instead. Now, in the first 10 volumes, I've given you many, many, many references to love. I'm not going to keep repeating them. Is that okay? Because right from the beginning of the Bible, the Lord looked only to the human race for love. Okay. And the text you should know off by heart by now is Deuteronomy 6:4-10. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all meaning 100%. Okay. I give life, Jesus said, but if they could, they would give me death. That's true of millions of people on the earth. But in spite of this, I continue my loving office. However, know that the soul who lives united with me and from the divine will, swimming in my immensity, which is what Louisa said at the beginning of this text, is all voice together with me as well. So if she walks, her steps speak, pursuing the sinner. Her thoughts are voices to people's minds, and so with all the rest. I think that's absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. So just being in the divine will, I differ from a whole lot of people in what I'm going to say now. Just being there, even if you say nothing. The very fact of being in the divine will means everything inside of you is declaring to the whole universe who you are and what you are, and is calling souls. Now, many people think I've got to actually say it. I've got to declare it for it to be a reality. And so I differ from some people on that one. So look at that. Let me just read it again so you'll see that I'm not completely wrong. However, know that the soul who lives united with me, that's living in the divine will, swimming in my immensity, in other words, you stay fused, is all voice together with me as well. So if she walks, her steps speak, pursuing the sinner. Her thoughts are voices to the minds, and so with all the rest. Only from these souls do I find as though recompense for the work of creation. That's Romans 8:19, that the whole of creation is crying out for these sons of God to show themselves. And in seeing that, unable to do anything by themselves to correspond to my love and maintain the harmony between me and them, they enter into my will, that's fusing. They make themselves the owners of the divine will, and they act in a divine manner. My love finds its outpouring, and I love them more than all other creatures, for the simple reason that you're allowing him to be himself. So that's a very important piece there. So April 21st, 1916, the garment of thorns which creatures have made for the humanity of Jesus. And I think of the Easter rising in Dublin. I continue my most bitter days, Louisa said. I fear that someday Jesus may not even come in passing. And in my sorrow, I keep repeating, Jesus, don't do this to me. If you don't want to speak, so be it. If you don't want to let me suffer, I resign myself. If you don't want to give me the gift of your charisms, fiat. But not coming at all, not this. Now you see her cross. Can you? The cross is something that you absolutely don't want because it crucifies you. And it's the privations that Louisa keeps on saying is crucifying her. And you have to understand that she's sitting in a bed doing nothing. If the Lord doesn't come, the day must be utterly endless and it must be incredibly boring. So you can understand the calls she has for him. You know that it would cost me my life and my very nature left without you until evening. It would actually melt. She wouldn't be able to survive because she doesn't eat and she doesn't really sleep. As I was saying this, blessed Jesus, increasing my bitterness, made himself seen, telling me, no, that if I do not come to pour myself out with you for a little while, it's because the world is receiving the last blow of destruction and all sorts of scourges. Ireland, take note. Okay. What fright, Louisa said. I remained terrified and petrified for the pain, and so I continued praying, and I said, my Jesus, each moment of your privation asks of you that a new life of yours be created within souls. Now, you'll notice that every now and then she manages to get on top of the pain and actually offer the thing that is costing her more than anything else, offering that to the Lord so that souls will be saved. And that offering with that level of sacrifice is a very pure sacrifice of incense before the Lord. Very powerful for intercession. And she said, and you must give me this grace. On this condition only do I accept your privation. It's not something trivial that I deprive myself of. I'm depriving myself of you. Immense, infinite, eternal good. The cost is immense. And therefore, let's come to a deal. That's one of the things I love about this lady. And that is, she wants something for her sacrifice. But of course, all human beings do, don't they? And Jesus extended his arms around my neck as though accepting. I looked at him, but what a frightful, a painful sight. Not only his head, but all of his most holy humanity was surrounded by thorns, so much so that as I embraced him, I was pricked. But I wanted to enter into Jesus at any cost. Now, here you've got somebody whose love is total and pure. And he, all goodness, broke that garment of thorns at the place of his head and put me inside to participate. I could see the divinity of Jesus, and although it was one with his humanity, while his humanity was being tormented, his divinity remained untouchable. That's very, very important, and it's one of the things that people find difficult when you talk about someone like Louisa seeing Jesus continuously in suffering, because since he died and he rose from the dead, there is no further suffering for him. So what is she looking at? It's terribly important. There are several answers for it. One of them is that everything Jesus did was divine as well as human. And he keeps on telling us that everything he said and did is in act, as if it was happening now. Okay. And so what he allows her to do is to go into a timeless situation, in other words, outside of time and space, and make reparation as if the passion was happening right now, so that she has a very powerful motivation to be able to intercede. Another way of looking at it is that Jesus is being crucified in his church. And so you're looking at the crucifixion of the church as well. And so sometimes he gets her to intercede specifically for the church, the body of Christ. And she sees the body of Christ being crucified. But it's very important for her to have touched the fact that his divinity is untouchable. Nothing can get through to the three divine persons. They are completely untouchable and sealed, as St. Paul said in 1 Timothy 6:16. I think it would be good to write it down there. 1 Timothy 6:16, God lives in unapproachable light. And as we go on now in the higher volumes, Louisa will talk about him more and more and more, simply as light. Okay. So Jesus said, "My daughter, have you seen what a painful garment human people have given to me, and how these thorns have penetrated into my humanity? These thorns have closed the door to the divinity and have surrounded all my humanity, only from which could my divinity come out for the good of sinners." Now, it is the sins of humanity that actually closes the door of heaven. This is brought out very clearly in the book of Deuteronomy. I can't remember the either chapter or verse at this moment, Moses said to the people that if your heart strays and you turn away from God and you turn towards anything else, which is idolatry, he said, heaven will be closed like brass. Heaven is closed because nothing unholy or unworthy can enter the presence of God. So there are people, because of the way they're living, they've closed themselves off to the divinity, but they've opened themselves up to the infernal regions. Because human beings will open themselves up to something. So because of their rebellion and their sins, they've cut off heaven and they've opened hell. They've actually allowed hell to enter. And in case you think that I'm exaggerating, there are people all over Ireland who are actually invoking evil spirits to come back, knowing that the symbolism of the snakes for St. Patrick was that he got rid of the evil spirits. They're inviting them back. So you either open up to the infernal region or you open up to God, one or the other. You can't be open to both. So now it was necessary that I remove part of the thorns, Louisa said, and I poured them upon creatures so that as the light of... it's Jesus that's speaking. Jesus is saying it's necessary that I himself remove part of these thorns and I pour them on top of creatures. That means for chastisement. So that as the light of my divinity flows from these thorns, I place their souls in safety. And the amazing thing is that chastisement has a number of functions. And one of them is that for anybody who is still open to life and open to growth, even if they still don't know the word God or know anything about his reality, then they are open for that light to actually come and start their journey. And it can be the strangest people who are open and the strangest people who are closed. You'd be amazed. The people you'd expect to be open can be closed, and the people you expect to be closed can be open. I was fascinated in the years when I was doing my public travelling, visiting prisons and finding people who are locked away because of their crimes, totally open to God. Fascinating. In fact, the very incarceration opened them up to God. It was either going to open them up to God or the demonic, one or the other. And I've seen both. But what the Lord wants is to place their souls in safety. That means that they're put on the right path, in the right direction. Therefore, it's necessary that the earth be invested with chastisements. Invested is a big word. Invested with chastisements, earthquakes, famines, wars, etc., in order to break this garment of thorns that they have made for me, so that the light of my divinity penetrating into their souls may remove their illusions and make better times arrive. Now, one of the things that chastisement do is they break people's deceptions, opens their eyes to the reality of life and death and the shortness of life and all the rest of it, and in that way opens them up to God. I want to give you Isaiah chapter 6, verses 9 to 10. The worst thing that can happen to us is what is in Isaiah chapter 6, verses 9 to 10, that he said these people are so blind that no matter what you put in front of them, they won't see. Now, they're so deaf that no matter what you say to them, they won't hear. And it's because their hearts are hardened. Now, what touches the hardened heart and enables people to begin to hear and begin to see is a correct chastisement. A chastisement is a correction. It's a correction put into a system. It's like when your computer goes wrong, that you have to have somebody who knows how to correct the system and get it back functioning again. And I want to give you Matthew 13, verses 14 and 15. There are different paths we can choose. One leads to heaven and the other leads to hell. So April the 23rd, 1916. At each thought about the passion of Jesus, the soul draws light from his humanity. Now, even if we got nothing else, that particular sentence is incredible. Okay. At each thought about the passion. And yet we do the hours of the passion, don't we? Mm-hmm. So, continuing in my usual state, Louisa said, my adorable Jesus made himself seen, all surrounded with light, because God is light. That's 1 John 1, 5. God is light, which came out from within his most sacred humanity and embellished him in such a way as to form an enchanting and enrapturing sight. Now, that's what the apostles saw on Mount Tabor, Matthew 17, verses 1 to 8. That's what St. Luke refers to in chapter 9, verses 28 to 36. That's what St. Peter is commenting on in 2 Peter 1, verses 16 to 18. And the preparation for this was Psalm 104, verse 2. Lord, you are clothed in majesty, you are wrapped in a robe of light. That's Psalm 104, verse 2. So Louisa is seeing this extraordinary shimmering light around Jesus. And Jesus said, my daughter, each pain that I suffered, each drop of blood, each wound, each prayer, each word, each action, each step, and all the rest of it, produced a light within my humanity, because everything he did was both divine and human. Okay? And this light embellished me in such a way as to keep all the blessed in heaven, understood, enraptured. Now, at each thought that the soul has about my passion, in each act of compassion and reparation, etc., she does nothing other than draw light from my humanity and be embellished by my likeness. Now, first of all, the picture that's being drawn here is that Jesus created this light within him from all his thoughts, words, actions, movements, steps, etc. And now he's saying that when we meditate on the passion, which created all the light for us, that we are drawing that light from him, and that that light is being drawn into us, and that we're becoming more and more and more light. So notice that we have to continuously meditate on the passion to let it come into us more and more. Have you noticed that in doing the hours of the passion, you can have done them for the 50th time and they're still fresh?
Yeah,
that's because your soul cannot take the fullness of what you're reading. I don't know how much of the hours that you can do at one particular time, but very often for me, I can only handle a paragraph. It's so rich. There is just so much there. that if you let it seep into you and let it become you and let it become your expression to him, that that is the time that you're actually giving. So I just want to say that so that you're not just reading it superficially and saying, well, I have to read this whole hour in this whole 60 minutes, because I don't think it's like that at all. I think it's a case of spending an hour with the Lord, which is a different subject. So let's come to May the 3rd, 1916. In the divine will, the soul prays like Jesus. Put a little ring around the word like. You pray like Jesus. Do you remember when Jesus taught the Our Father? He said, pray like this. And what do? We don't pray like that. We simply repeat the words. We don't pray the way he prayed. We just repeat the words. So, she satisfies the Father and she repairs for all as Jesus did. So while I was praying, my lovable Jesus placed himself close to me and I could hear that he too was praying. So I began to listen to him and Jesus told me, this is actually very important now, my daughter, pray. But pray the way I prayed. Number one, that is, pour all of yourself into my will. That's fuse, isn't it? Okay. Because he's going to give you detailed instruction here. Pour all of yourself into my will. And in the divine will, you will find God and you will find all creatures. Now, number two, making all the things that creatures, making all the things that creatures or souls do, making them your own, you will then, number three, give them all back to God as if they were one single person. Because the divine will is the owner of everything. Number four, then you will place at the feet of the divinity the good acts in order to give honour to the divinity. And number five, and the bad acts in order to repair them through the sanctity, the power and the immensity of the divine will. Now, this is very clear instruction from Jesus. There's nothing to do, only actually do it. Is that okay? From which nothing can escape. Now, Jesus says, this was the life of my humanity upon the earth. Now, you cannot say strongly enough how important this paragraph is. This was the life of my humanity on earth. As holy as it was, I still needed the divine will in order to give complete satisfaction to the Father, because the human will by itself can't do it. But Jesus had the divine will as well as the human will inside of him. So as holy as Jesus' humanity was, he still needed the divinity, the divine will, in order to give complete satisfaction to the Father and to redeem the human generations. Now, the human generations means from Adam to Zachary. I call it A to Z. In fact, only in the divine volition could I find all generations past, present and future. Now notice, he's telling us what to do in our prayers here. It's only there you will find souls. And you will find all of their acts. Ring the little word all. All of their acts, all of their thoughts, all of their words. And as though in act, that means they're available at this moment. And the reason is that God is outside of time and space. And God is what the astrophysicist called a singularity. He's one point, there's no past or future. He just simply is. When he was asked what his name was, he said, I am. That was it. It's the shortest biography ever written. And the strange thing is that how few people understand it. So you will find everything. So once you get into the divine will, You're actually praying for everyone, regardless of religion or no religion, regardless of false religion or true religion, regardless of whether they proclaim themselves atheist or believer. In God's eyes, they're all his family. It's like as if God was the father of a large family, dozens and dozens and dozens of children, as you would find in Muslim countries, you know. There's a huge diversity among the children. I mean, Osama bin Laden was one of about 25 children, as far as we know, something like that. So there's huge diversity among the children. And that's the way God looks at us, that there's this immense diversity. And if we look at them the way God looks at them, then we won't be blocked by their religion or their lack of it, or their faith or their lack of it, or whatever. And seeing them in him, we are able to pray for them as if they were your twin brother or sister. And I deliberately say that. In other words, you pray for them as if they were your closest relative, because they are. I've explained to you many times that in the Bible, the word man represents mankind, but it represents mankind in feminine and masculine, both. And it's completely wrong to say brothers and sisters when people are reading in church, because they're obviously showing their ignorance. We had it just a few days ago here. It was crazy. So in the divine will, you will find everything that you want to touch. And in this holy will, letting nothing escape me, I took all thoughts into my mind. And for each of them in particular, I brought myself before the Supreme Majesty and I repaired for them. Now, the thing that gets me here is, never mind the rest of humanity for this moment. He went before the Father and took all of my thoughts from the day I was born until the day I die. Just doing it for one person to me is mind-boggling. He did it for everybody. It's beyond thinking. It's incredible. And in this same will, I descended into each of mind of the creature, giving them the good which I had interceded for their intelligence. Now, in this divine will, he wants the recovery of the intelligence, the intellect, the memory, and the will, the three great powers of the soul. So that's actually what he's praying for. In my gazes, I took the eyes of all creatures. I took their words in my voice, their movements in my movements, their works, and that's complete identification. Okay? Their affections and desires in my heart, their feet in my steps, and making them my own in this divine will, my humanity satisfied the Father, and I placed the poor creatures in safety. Okay? Now, when he says he places them in safety, the thought that comes to my mind is a child that a parent wants to punish because of what they've done, and the other parent grabs the child and protects them. And you've got to go through me to get to the kid. You know what I mean? That's placing the child in safety. Or maybe a better image would be that you see the child is in danger on the road, or in danger from attack from an animal or even a person, and you grab them and bring them to safety. Or you see an old person beginning to cross the road, and the way they're doing it, you know darn well they either can't see or hear properly, one or the other, and you run to help them, to put them in safety. And this is what he's doing for us, that he's putting us completely in safety. Therefore, that we will be open to grace, open to redemption, open to him bringing us to the fullness of perfection. I mean, this one message by itself is a whole retreat. You could do an entire retreat on how do you live in the divine will on this paragraph alone. So as the Divine Father was satisfied, nor could he reject me, because he himself being the holy will. Now, my friends, if you have a coloured pen, please colour what I've just read. He himself being the holy will. When people say to you that the divine will is all wrong, you say, excuse me, the divine will is God the Father. It's written there for you. Do you see it clearly? Just make absolutely certain that you've covered it. The Father, God the Father, is the divine will. And so that's why entering into this sanctity is entering into the highest possible sanctity. Okay. He couldn't reject me because he himself, being the holy will, could he perhaps reject himself? So you can see, therefore, if God the Father is the divine will and you fuse yourself into the divine will, you've placed yourself in the highest possible position to intercede for souls. There is no higher position. Would he reject himself? Certainly not. More so, since in these acts he found perfect sanctity, unreachable and enrapturing beauty. Jesus is speaking about his own sanctity. Highest love, immense and eternal acts. Acts done in the divine will are eternal. And he found invincible power. This was the whole life of my humanity upon the earth, from the first instant of my conception up to my last breath, to continue it in heaven and in the most holy sacrament. Now, Louisa says the most holy sacrament as if there was only one. You need to add the most holy sacrament of the Eucharist, because we've got seven sacraments. Now, why can you not do this as well? Jesus is saying. He's given absolute detailed instructions and saying, this is what you do. Why can't you do it? For one who loves me, everything is possible. That's John 11:22. Have I not told you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? And the opposite of that is, if you don't believe, you won't see anything, which is the position of most of humanity. For one who loves me, everything is possible. Please remember that on the bad days, won't you? The difficult days, everything's possible. United with me, that's fused in my will, take and bring the thoughts of all before the divine majesty within your thoughts. The gazes of all in your eyes, in your words, movements, affections and desires, those of your brothers, in order to repair for them and impetrate for them light, grace and love. Can you see why we have to live very pure, holy lives? Because I couldn't offer the thoughts of all humanity in my thoughts if my thoughts were screwed. Could I? No, I'd be making an absolutely unworthy prayer. And hence, there's more reparation and cleansing in this journey than in any journey. In my will, he said, you will find yourself in me and in all. And you will live my life and you will pray with me. Now, he's telling us that in the divine will, we can actually reach the interior of the human race. It's the position of greatest influence on this earth. I mean, people generally think that to make any impression on either the church or the state, that you need at least 100,000 signatures to even approach them. And the Lord says, just fuse in my divine will and you've reached the thoughts of all humanity. If we can take that on board, we'll become real intercessors. So in my will, you will find yourself in me and in all people. You will live my life and you will pray with me. Now, notice we don't pray without him. Everything is through him, with him and in him. The Divine Father will be happy and the whole of heaven will say, who is this calling us from the earth? That's like the end of the Song of Songs. Who is this person that's like an army in battle array? Who is this that wants to compress this holy will within herself? enclosing all of us together. And how much good can the earth obtain by making heaven descend to the earth? So literally in our fusing and obeying what is here, and I really want you to take it out off the book. What I do is I put A, B, C, D, E, this is what you do. And just then just get on with it. Whereas you can't be going looking for the page all the time. So I take it off the page and just write it out for myself. And for some unknown reason, if I write it in my own hand, I'll do it. If I type it up, it's just another typed thing, you know. It doesn't have the same effect on me at all. But in writing it by hand, I find I'm actually speaking to myself. You know, maybe that's just me, I don't know. So May the 25th, 1916, the work of the celestial farmer in the soul. Now, you have the parables of Matthew 13, where Jesus tells us that he's the sower, sowing the seed of God's word in our souls. Okay. how correspondence is necessary in order to produce rich fruits. Now, correspondence is not a word that we use. We say response. A response from us is actually required. So we have another absolutely vital message about spiritual growth here. So these two messages are really enough food to keep you going for quite a while. Continuing in my usual state, Louisa said, I was all afflicted, especially because in the past days, Blessed Jesus had shown me how foreign soldiers were invading Italy. I loved the way Louisa goes into an absolute tizzy because foreign soldiers would invade Italy. She has the old attachment to home that we've all lost, haven't we? We've all become worldlings, you know what I mean, as distinct from attached to your own country. And she was so attached to her own country. So she saw the great massacre of our soldiers and the pools of blood which Jesus himself was horrified to look at. I felt my poor heart bursting with grief and I said, save my brothers. Your images, that's Romans 8:29, from this pool of blood, and do not permit that any soul plunge into hell. Now notice she has her priorities right. She knows that if she's shown this, it's going to happen. Is that okay? And so if this is going to happen and there is going to be a terrible slaughter, well, then the issue is heaven or hell. And in seeing the divine justice will ignite its fury even more against the poor creatures, I felt I was dying. Almost to distract me from such tormenting scenes, Jesus said, my daughter, the love with which I love souls is so great that as soon as the soul decides to give herself to me, I surround her with much grace. Now, my comment there is probably quite shocking. God is a big softy. In all kinds of sermons and retreats and books that have been written, certainly in my lifetime and before it, you got the impression that God was a judge sitting in the Supreme Court. And you put a foot wrong. Remember when we were children? Yeah. If you're 2 minutes late for Mass, down you go. And I remember saying, going for a walk, I was quite young, I mean around 10 years of age, I said, there's something wrong with God. If my father wouldn't throw me out for being 2 minutes late, and he was quite a disciplinarian, do you know what I mean? So there's something wrong with God. I was too young to say there was something wrong with the preacher. But you quite quickly came to the idea that if people are just a couple of minutes late for Mass, I'm just taking that as an example, that you would get divine punishment. There was something really skewy about the whole thing. And the thing that came to me was no love. Therefore, it was actually a contradiction of reality. Okay. And what Jesus says here is the moment a person makes the slightest movement to open up to God, he pours his grace into that person. It's absolutely amazing. And you might put Ezekiel 18 there. and it's at least verses 1 to 20, where he says he definitely doesn't want the death of a sinner. He only wants that a sinner will convert and live. 18, Ezekiel 18:1-20 approximately. So he said, I surround her with so much grace, I caress her, I move her, I pick her up, I endow her with sensible graces, with fervours, with inspirations, with squeezes to her heart. That's the image I would give you there is of a parent who's had a child, who has a child who has been through a period of being really stubborn and rebellious. And one day the child turns around and smiles at the parent. And the parent is so absolutely thrilled. They pick the child up and hug them and kiss them and tell them they're wonderful and great. And all they've done is they've smiled at you. But what you see in that smile is hope. And what you do is you encourage it. That's what he's saying here. That the slightest sign from us, he moves in with all kinds of grace. So in seeing herself so filled with graces, the soul begins to love me, forms as though a foundation of prayers. In other words, begins to really talk to God. And pious practices within her heart and begins to exercise herself in the virtues. All this forms a flowery field in the soul. In other words, the soul begins to grow. But my love is not content with just flowers. It wants fruits. Now, I want to give you John 15. And it's definitely verses 1 to 5, but you can put verses 1 to 10. And Galatians 5:20-21, the fruits of the Spirit. So he doesn't just want flowers, he wants fruits. And so it begins, that is, God's love begins to make the flowers fall. And that is, it strips her of sensible love, of fervour and everything else. Now that is classic teaching on spirituality. Absolutely classic. You'll find it in John of the Cross, Teresa of Avila, all of the saints. That as soon as God sees that there is genuineness in the soul seeking him, he will take away the fervour because he then begins the purification immediately. Okay. That's like a wise gardener saying, now, I know the plant looks lovely and everything, but if I trim it back this way, it'll be even better. OK. So, I strip her of sensible love, of fervour and of everything else in order to make the fruits be born. And, of course, the person finds it difficult. I've had, over the years, I've had so many people coming to me and saying, I've had this wonderful charismatic experience, you know, and I was baptised in the Spirit and I had all these gifts and graces and all the rest of it, and then bang, it's all gone and it's all over. It was obviously a bubble. I say no, it's starting now. The honeymoon is over and real life begins, and real life is the honeymoon, because in real life you actually deal with all the problems and the difficulties and you have to work and you've got to labour and all the rest of it. So this is actually a very important moment for you. You not only have not gone back, but you're ready to shoot forward. And I've seen the surprise on people's faces. But it is, in fact, a beginning, not an ending. And that's why the Lord then says, if the soul is faithful, because sometimes, you know, if they've really enjoyed praying before now, and now they don't enjoy praying, being faithful can be very difficult. If she continues her pious practices, which you see Louisa doing all the time in her privations, that even when she's suffering desperately, she will still remain faithful. So if she remains doing that, if she continues living the virtuous life, and if she takes no pleasure in any other human being, that means she doesn't go back to a wrong level. She doesn't go back to the level she's just come out of. If she does not think about herself, we find this difficult, don't we? But of me. Now, for that, I want to give you 2 Corinthians 5:15, where St. Paul says, we no longer live for ourselves, but for Christ. So, through trust in me, now here again, you're having what I call a revision course in the early stages of the spiritual life. Through trust in me, She will give flavor to the fruits. Through faithfulness, she will make the fruits mature. And through courage, tolerance, tranquility, she will grow and make them rich fruits. In other words, it's actually dealing with the difficulties that we grow. And all the virtues are given an opportunity to express themselves. For example, if nobody irritated me, how would I grow in patience? Because you actually grow in patience by actually dealing with it and learning how to be calm when somebody is getting at you. And Jesus continued, I, the celestial farmer, will pick these fruits and make them my food. And I will plant another field, all flowery and beautiful, in which heroic fruits will grow. Now, you see, you might do well on the first harvest. Okay, you've managed to get to the point where you had the flowers and then the fruits. Okay. It's a different matter altogether when he harvests all of that. And he starts all over again, but on a higher plane. And again, you've got to go through the flowers and to the fruits, because he's never satisfied until he gets divine fruits. And the strange thing is, we can be very generous the first time. We can really drag our heels the second time. And if he does it a third time, we can decide he's being rather hard on us. And that's because we cannot see. When it's happening inside of you, you cannot see what he's actually doing. And the example I always give of that is of a canvas in which a painter is slapping paint onto the canvas. All the canvas knows is that I've pinned to this board, I can't move. And he's slapping paint on me, and I don't know what he's doing. He's scratching and he's pulling and he's pushing. And the canvas cannot see the result. It's only other people can see the result. You know. And so you can, according to yourself, you can be having a rather difficult time because you don't see what the Lord is actually doing. And that's why it can be very important to share, you know, and you realise it's okay. It's absolutely fine. And that's why you hear Jesus saying to Louisa frequently, let me do, you know, don't interfere. Let me at it. Let me do it. So then he's looking for heroic fruits, such as to snatch unheard of graces from my heart. You see, up in the divine will, it's the heroic fruits he's after. But if she's unfaithful and mistrustful and becomes restless and takes pleasure in human things, blah, 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 she slips down to the lower level. And the awful thing is, if you slip down to the lower level, you've got to climb up again. And if you think it was hard the last time, it's actually much harder if you've slipped down. I remember a very tragic case of a man I knew, I won't say what country. He had been a leader in Charismatic Renewal and very charismatic. By that, I mean very gifted, okay? And everybody recognised him as the leader. And then I could see that trouble was coming. And finally, he fell into grievous sin. And I won't go into any details. You don't need details. But it took him about 10 years to recover. And I mean to get to the point where he could start again. Because now he realised he had fallen from the top of the mountain to the bottom. And to actually get the courage to even attempt the journey again. A number of us were trying to encourage him and all the rest of it. It was really sad. It was really sad. So that's why the Lord keeps saying to us, even if you slow down, don't stop. Just stay on the road, you know what I mean? Stay on the journey, because it is very, very difficult if you allow yourself to slip back to take the journey again. That's why he says, but if she's unfaithful and mistrustful, becomes restless, takes pleasure in human things, these fruits will be unripe, insipid, bitter, covered with mud, that's sin, and will serve to embitter me and to make me withdraw from the soul. Now, I think that's a very important place to stop, because I don't want to go into another long message tonight.